What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Spooky.
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and spooky mystery.
And I'm J-Clone 24.
The scariest number.
It's up there. There was a survey done, and that was about, I think that was number 17 on the list of scariest
24
numbers.
24 was number 17?
Yeah. It's a wild list. A lot of twists and turns. I didn't know where it was going.
It was weird because 1 through 5 was 1 through 5, but not in the right order.
No. You're off. You're missing like 3. I don't know. It's Halloween time.
It's Halloween.
It's Halloween season.
And for this Halloween,
when the veil is thin.
Oh, yeah. For this Halloween, we're going to talk about some horribly haunted locations in our friend Down Under's land, Australia.
Ooh, all right.
So if anybody didn't know, Australia is our third biggest country by listeners. So we're going to pay you guys some homage this Halloween.
Is it homage or homage?
Homage.
Or homage?
That's what I always say.
I think it's both, homage or homage. I think it's accepted as both. But I think homage.
Homage?
No, I think you pronounce the H as the actual. It's like the word forte. You ever heard that? You know, this is my forte. I think I've talked about this before. The actual word's fort. It was just fort. And people started saying forte.
Like shop and shoppy?
I guess so. And then, but now forte is accepted as the right way to say it. But originally it's, now, well, I guess it's both. But originally it's just fort. And it's just, so there's my little soapbox.
Just so everybody knows, here is your content warning. some of the places we're going to talk about have horrible past.
Ooh, like scary?
Like bad things happened.
Well, I mean, on a country that was made by, what was it, convicts that was all sent there?
Well, I mean, Aborigines lived there before that.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, modern day.
No, it wasn't just convicts. That's kind of a misconception. But there were a lot of convicts sent there. There are towns that are made from convicts.
And maybe that's why everything's poisonous and deadly and everything wants to kill you.
Well, that was beforehand.
Oh, okay. That was already like that, yeah. Huh? That's why we sent them there. Really? We, as like, if I had anything to do with it.
The British. Terrible.
Yeah, the British.
Anyways.
They're just about as bad as the French.
We're going to talk about a lot of bad things happen. In some of these places.
Down in Australia.
We're going to talk about, just so this is a content warning, like lobotomies and electric stuff and all kinds of stuff. How do you make a place haunted? We're going to talk about that.
Ooh, okay.
So, is it Aberdale? Arbordale?
It's a famous town
in Australia.
Oh, gosh. I would say Aradale.
Aradale, you guys know what we're talking about. Put it in the comments below how wrong it is.
Any Australians out there, please correct us.
And, yeah.
Or is it Aradale? I think it's Aradale.
All right. Perched on what is formerly known as Madman's Hill is one of the most notorious insane asylums to ever exist within Australia. The Aradale Lunatic Asylum was a psychopathy hospital built in Ayrton, Australia during the 1800s and was operated within the community right through the 1990s.
Wow. Okay. About the same time the Mansfield prison?
Insane asylum?
Yeah. Went
prison, insane asylum. It was all of it.
Yeah.
It's one building.
You know,
it's one building where a bunch of bad things happened.
Yeah. And it shut down in the 90s. That's weird.
Well, it's because it's when people were like, here's my honest thing. It's when video cameras were getting popular and handheld.
Okay.
Is why everything stopped in the 90s.
Hmm.
Because you could get proof and show people what exactly was happening without going there. And it's the same thing with animal testing. When we talked about some of the bad animal testing happened in the U.S. Mm-hmm. and the world. But I'm just saying, you know, we know more about the U.S. than other places.
Right.
And that's why it all kind of stopped in the 90s, in my opinion.
Or at least went underground or went more hidden, I guess.
Yeah. Well, most of the lunatic or insane asylums.
Yeah.
You know, they transferred to medical hospitals for mental, you know, people with mental problems, whether it's disabilities or psychopathy, you know, any of these things.
Which seems like we don't have those much of those anymore.
No, they got cut a long time ago.
Which is something I think, you know, we're desperately lacking.
Well, I think it's because they all got villainized so much because a lot of them were villains.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's not to say that's
so. I think that's why they went away.
Yeah,
is no doctor wanted to go into that field of study because the ones that came before them were a little bit of monsters.
Yeah, a little bit like the human experimenting, and that's just terrible.
We're gonna talk about that.
Terrible, like Jackie Kennedy.
Oh well, she probably ended up here for a little bit. So this was was constructed at a time where other insane asylums were also being built in the state of Victoria. They were thought to be essential to deal with the crisis of increasing number of so-called lunatics in the area. Women that had opinions, mentally disabled people that just, I mean, what?
Women that had opinions?
That's not a joke.
Okay, go on.
A lot of lobotomies, a lot of women that got lobotomized were because they were outspoken.
Hmm. Yeah, that's terrible.
That's not a joke.
That's terrible.
You've never seen that?
No.
Especially all the way through like the 1950s?
No.
You could get your wife, anyways, you could get your wife reset with a big iron pick.
Jeez, it's terrible.
Yeah. That happened.
Well, you know, I don't know. I guess medical, when the medical, I don't know, cartel's in charge, these things happen.
This is kind of before that, but.
They got to start somewhere. I'm sure they were in charge back then, too. They just had different ways of doing things, like drilling a hole in your head.
They didn't drill it.
Oh, yeah?
It was a hammer.
Well, up the nose?
Yeah, well, down at the back of the eye socket.
Man, that's so bad.
With a big iron pick. Anyways, this mainly consists of people suffering from an array of mental health issues, other ailments, or people who were deemed criminally insane. Individuals could be institutionalized with an insane asylum, such as Aberdale. For most minute and what would deem in our modern world today as petty reasons.
Okay. Like having an opinion?
Like having like having a strong-willed woman.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
They saw thousands of men, women, and even children pass through the doors of Aberdale. Or Adderdale. I'm sorry, Australians. I don't know how to pronounce it.
You're like adding letters that aren't,
yeah,
don't exist there.
Aradale.
There we go.
Aradale. A-R-A-Dale.
But you got, also, you got to do it, say it like Australians.
Aradale.
Where they don't pronounce like everything. So it's probably like Aradale. Ardle.
Conditions within the hospital were very less desirable for both staff and patients. The building was uncomfortable, overcrowded, and treatment methods were considered practically barbaric, even by some of the other standards of the day. Both electroshock therapy and lobotomies were performed en masse
in
this institution. Death was another factor for the contributor of the dark history that cloaks this insane asylum. Do you want to guess? So it was an operation for around 130 years.
Okay.
So keep that in mind. How many people died in this building?
2,500.
In 130 years?
Yeah.
Over 13,000.
Oh, gosh.
It was right around, what?
It's a little bit more than I anticipated.
About 1,000 a year.
Yeah, it's a lot more than I was expecting.
Oh, not 1,000 a year. Sorry, 1,000 a decade.
1,000 a decade, yeah. So 100 a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a person dying every 3 days-ish.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's not great. I want to talk about lobotomies.
Yeah, because I don't... my understanding, basic understanding of a lobotomy is they drill a hole through the frontal cortex of your brain, and it severs, like, the emotional part of your...
Kind of. That you... Yes, you made it more...
Crude?
No. You made it more professional sounding.
Oh, okay. Okay, let me...
This was done with a hammer and an ice pick.
They shove an ice pick up your nose or shove it into your face and just...
I'm trying not to be too... Let me read.
Okay.
The lobotomy is also referred as a linotomy, is a neurosurgical procedure. See, that's also dressing it up.
Neurosurgical? Yeah, there's nothing surgical about this.
Process that could damage these connections to the brain. You could stop bad behaviors caused by any condition, such as bipolar, schizophrenia, manic depression, and other mental illnesses. In the 1880s, a Swiss physician named Gottlob Burkhalter claimed to have removed parts of the central cortex from the brain from patients who were suffering from auditory hallucinations and stemming from schizophrenia. And guess what? Those problems would go away.
Interesting. Yeah, because your brain can't function.
But even though his patients died from procedures, and most of the others that survived committed suicide shortly after, he deemed it a success in calming patients.
I guess he's not wrong.
So half the patients he did this on in the 1880s died, and the other half would calm right down.
Is it really calming when they just physically can't express emotion anymore?
And then they kill themselves.
Yeah, that's so calming.
So in 1935, Portuguese neuroscientist Antonio Egas Mortes was credited with inventing the true lobotomy, performing what he was considered to be a successful trials on chimpanzees. Oh, and he went on to test it on human subjects. While he claimed the procedure was a success, the side effects were fever, vomiting, bladder and bowel. Basically, you can't control your bladder and bowel.
You're dying.
Eye problems, fatigue, empathy, and death. He turned about 25% of his patients, I almost said victims, into vegetables.
Gosh.
But guess what?
It was a success.
They weren't violent or outspoken anymore.
Right. So success.
Not to mention the procedure was often done without any anesthetic.
I can't imagine.
Zero. The initial procedure was performed by... I'm actually making myself sick.
Well, you got to keep reading. You got to power through. I need to know.
Cutting a hole in the skull and injecting ethanol straight into the brain to destroy the fibers that were connecting the frontal lobe to other parts of the brain.
Oh, gosh. So they was like chemical?
Yes. It was chemical lobotomies at first.
Jeez, okay.
Well, the first true lobotomies. Where they classified like in the 1930s.
Just shoot chemicals in their brain.
Oh.
Success.
Oh, I'm actually getting sick.
That's just how modern medical science, you know, is just based off these foundations, these foundational practices that got us to where we are today.
I'm trying not to get sick.
Let's just take all the medicine out of the earth and the plants, you know, and make synthetic versions of them and then chemically castrate your brain, essentially.
So the transorbital lobotomy took hold after that and was the most common procedure with people that when you hear the term lobotomy, this is the one you think of. Okay.
Orbital. Transorbital. Where's your orbital bone? Is that in the back?
No, that's your eyes.
Occipital.
Okay, no, that's your orbital.
So your orbital is right here.
Okay. No, the back.
Back?
Yeah.
I thought that's occipital.
No, it's orbital. It holds your eye. Anyways.
Oh, back of your eye.
The back of your eye.
Okay. I'm talking about skull.
It is a part of your skull.
Yeah. But I was saying back of your skull, not eye.
No. The back of your eye socket.
Gotcha.
Basically, what they would do, it was a very similar instrument to an ice pick called an orbocastial.
Okay.
If you've seen the pictures of them next to each other, they're the same thing.
Okay.
I want to make that very clear. It was an ice pick that they would hammer through the patient's eye socket.
Ugh.
And then they marketed this as a fast incision-free surgery.
Yeah.
That didn't... Here's how they marketed it. Okay. Listen to what I'm saying.
I'm listening.
They marketed it as a fast incision-free surgery that didn't need to be performed by a qualified doctor.
Oh, nice. So anyone could do it.
That's why people were taking their housewives in.
Hmm. Yeah, to what? To the
an
general
attitude
store?
Adjustment.
Probably just the general store, you know, down the road.
The guy Freeman that invented this version of it, considered himself a showman. He would travel around the U.S. performing and demonstrating lobotomies at mental institutions.
Gosh.
He would chew gum and didn't wash his hands, and he was not concerned about hygiene of this practice at all.
Well, there's no incisions, so...
He could perform a surgery in less than 10 minutes and sometimes would hold an ice pick in each hand and do two patients at once.
Impressive. It's like a circus sideshow.
He had a 14% fatality rate on the table.
That's actually pretty good numbers.
And he performed over 3,500 lobotomies in this short time.
What do you do? What's the showman do, though, when someone dies? Like, how do they... Well, how do you think they, like, play it off?
He just keeps talking and doesn't let anybody...
Just throw the tarp over and...
So lobotomies were so prevalent in Airedale's insane asylum that pretty much any unruly patient got one.
Gosh.
It didn't matter if you were like, I just went out.
See, maybe there are good reasons we don't have the mental institutions.
Well, like I said, I do think this is one of those things that needed tore all the way down and rebuilt.
Yeah.
You can't fix it at this point. Like in the 1990s, why they just went away is how bad they were for how long they had been bad.
Which is true, but we do need,
there needs to be mental health institutes 100%. That are highly monitored.
Yes. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I don't know if we'll talk about electroshock therapy next. It's not nearly as bad as this. But in the 1950s, scientists developed antipsychotics and antidepressant medicines, which found to be much more humane and effective than lobotomies. And they were kind of phased out and were illegal in several countries by this time for obvious reasons. They were still performed in the U.S., though. Don't worry.
Of course. We do everything here. That's why we still have Red 40 in all of our... Is that Red 40, right?
Yeah, that's the one I'm drinking right now.
Right now you're drinking it. We still have it in all of our food.
Which there is a big thing with ADHD and Red 40 addiction.
100%, yeah. I've seen it too. I mean, with kids, it's really bad.
Yeah, but I'm already
addicted.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna have to cut it. We'll have to figure it out. Oh, real quick though, orbital bones are like all the bones in your face. There is no like specific, like that's just the orbital bone. Yeah, it's the whole bones, like all from your forehead down to like your upper jaw area, and then all everything in between your cheeks, your eyebrow, all that's orbital.
So, coming back to the haunting side of this,
okay,
this is the one I have the most information on.
Yeah.
Where people don't know, you know, the full history, when they enter the rooms where lobotomies were performed,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people complain of sharp headaches, especially in the eye, often unaware of the spaces where the procedures were performed.
Yeah. You know, I've kind of sensed that before too, and I don't know if it's, I don't know what it is.
I think it's like scarring on the psyche. Or on 100%. The collective consciousness or unconsciousness or whatever.
Well, have you ever experienced where you see someone like skin their knee
and you're like,
and you feel it?
Yeah.
You feel a scrape on your knee. You feel your, or like someone skin their toes all up. Like I've seen that riding scooters around as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You see someone riding it with no shoes on every time. Did. You either just peel off the bottom of your foot or like you.
This is a gross episode.
It is.
I'm going to throw up.
But it's happened.
I've literally got the drool going like.
Or you just scrape your top of your foot on the cement or something. I don't know, but it hurts. And you see someone else do that, you can feel it. It's So it's interesting thing, because I don't know if that is just you seeing it and then sympathizing, like in your own head, you're creating the feeling in your head just because you see it, or if you're physically tuning into that person and feeling their pain a little bit. I don't know.
I think it's a little of both.
So with this example, like you're talking about where they're feeling this pain in their eyes, it makes me wonder, is it just something that's an energy that's put out and you pick up? I don't know. We're always picking up on
stuff. Lobotomies were the ones that you used for patients that were just uncontrollable.
Mm-hmm.
Women that had opinions.
Gosh, that's so bad.
Black people that won the right to vote.
Uncontrollable.
And I'm not joking. A lot of black people in the U.S., that is.
Yeah.
A lot of black people ended up in these. There's a Family Guy did a joke about it.
Ending up in the mental health facilities or the insane asylums?
Insane asylums, because they wanted rights.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. No, I know these insane asylums. And if you just look into their history in general, like where they came from and all that, it's pretty weird. It's just a weird thing.
Some of them, anyways, it doesn't matter. So electroshock therapy was a procedure that was developed in 1938. Electrical currents were circulated through the brain with a theory that the current can affect the brain's electrical activity in a way that can lessen symptoms of a person suffering from psychopathy or depressive symptoms. So if this is for, if you have an unresponsive person, this person that's just so depressed,
mm-hmm.
you're like, they don't need the brain scrambled with a pick. They need the brain scrambled with electricity.
They need,
liven them up.
Yep. Give them some juice.
In this procedure was this per- it is that this procedure is still used today in hospitals where patients are given muscle relaxants and put under general anesthetic. The current introduced a seizure, however, the patient does not, you know, convulse due to the muscle relaxant.
Wow.
So a lot of they wake up a little groggy, but most importantly, pain free and clear headed for 30 minutes after. So today it is still used in some medical procedures to ID parts of the brain that are like suffering, you know where it is, so you don't have to open them up.
Okay.
So like you have a CT or even like a neural pathway map.
Yeah.
So you cause a seizure to see where it is.
Oh gosh.
Like it's much more controlled now, and there are signs that smaller electroshock therapy can work for things because we are electrical beings.
Right. Yeah.
Not what they were doing in the 1930s and 40s though. It was unregulated. And they were not performed under such controlled and comfortable conditions for patients. It was, like I said, it was invented in the 1930s by an Italian. Man,
I forgot to wet the sponge.
A scene from the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is basically in our memories of how the procedures were administrated. While Hollywood had a tendency to over-exaggerate things, it probably wasn't super over-exaggerated in this example.
Mm, I never saw that movie.
It's not good. Well, it's a fine movie. What happened is not good.
Right. I understand.
But yeah, so basically, some of the volts would just straight up kill people.
Yeah.
Like the first time they sat in the chair, because they would be like, let's turn it up to 10.
Here's an electric chair, basically.
He hasn't moved today.
Yeah, he moved.
Yeah, he's dancing.
Yeah, he's literally floating.
All right, let's talk about why. So why could this place be haunted?
Huh. Hmm.
So this is how you make. So given the brutal nature and the history surrounding this mental hospital, the ghost story or two can be expected. But this place has dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands. Once again, 13,000 people lost their lives in this place.
It's a lot.
One of the best known ghosts to roam the halls of the abandoned hospital is that of Nurse Carrie. She is known to haunt the woman's ward and is thought to be continuing her nursing duties, looking for her former patients in the afterlife to take care of. Her ghost is seen by many and heard by even more. There have been many reports of hearing a disembodied clicking of a woman's high heels throughout the empty ward, while the soft sounds of a woman's voice was singing, something that Carrie was known to do through her life to ease her patients' tension.
How nice. And she's still doing it for eternity. So,
but is that really her? Or is that, like we talk about, that kind of like a memory?
Right.
Like something so tragic or so emotional.
It's burnt.
Burns into the fabric of the universe and just repeats.
Yeah.
Because this sounds like a repeater. So what? A residual haunting.
Right. Yeah.
There's no consciousness there. It's just she either cared so deeply or was so touched by the trauma around her that this kind of image got burnt.
Right, and, yeah. The behavior's repeating.
Yeah, some of the other ghosts or whatever roam around here are not nearly as friendly as Nurse Kelly, though. Many people have encountered extremely dark shadow entities through the insane asylum and been physically affected by unseen forces. It is particularly common within the former men's wing, where people are claimed to have been bitten, scratched, pushed, slammed, and punched.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's, I don't want any of those things to happen from a ghost.
This seems fitting, given this would be the area where most dangerous patients were kept. Also, they were tortured there.
Yeah, they were tortured. And I mean, especially if they had like whatever mental problems they had being in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who's to say that's not, they weren't possessed by a demon at that point, having those mental issues. And then it's just stuck there when you kill the person.
Yeah. Other people or other paranormal phenomena occur throughout the building, and it makes up for everything. We're hearing voices, no one around, being overcome by dizziness, nausea, headaches, as well as encountering phantom smells, strange noises, apparitions, and having electrical devices interfered with, and seeing shadows of what appear to be monsters. So not even human shadow creatures. The J Ward, the prison within the hospital, is the most dangerous part of it. The J Ward was originally Arbuck County's goal to convert for converts for use of a maximum security psych ward for the criminally sane with inside this place.
Mm.
So the whole place was horrible, but they had the J Ward was a special place for the criminally insane.
Yeah. So the worst of the worst.
I just sit there in shock. Some of their notorious inmates, Bill Wallace, the oldest prisoner in world's history. In 1926, Wallace was arrested for the connection of a shooting death of an American man named William Ernest Williams at the Waterloo Cafe in King Street in Melbourne. It was alleged that Wallace had been angry at the man for refusing to stop smoking inside the cafe, and then he shot him dead.
Wow.
Two separate doctors declared him to be insane and unfit to stand trial. So now that's like a scapegoat thing people use.
Yeah.
This is like, no, send me to prison.
Yeah, don't
I'd rather go to prison.
Because they'll lobotomize you.
Since the J Ward's at the government's pleasure.
Ooh.
Or sorry, the governor's pleasure. The governor kind of stepped in and is like, he's going to the J Ward. Wallace was admitted at 19 to 26 at the age of 44 and remained in custody until his death. In 1989, he was 107.
Wow.
He was both the oldest patient at the facility and the oldest prisoner in world's history.
Okay, that's kind of nuts. How do you make it that long?
The electroshock. Kept him alive.
Oh, maybe we should keep this going.
He liked the government-issued tobacco that came in a 50-pound block.
Oh, my gosh.
He led his daily life at the J Ward content and considered to be his home. He preferred to the address of Mr. Wallace. Was said to always act like a gentleman in there.
Well, he lived over half his life in there. Oh. I'd imagine he'd make himself pretty comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. Imagine going in. I'm not even in my 40s yet, and I can't imagine being in prison over half my life. Like 60 for the more years?
64 years.
Oh, my gosh.
That's double my life.
That's crazy.
That's 200% more than I've already lived.
Yeah.
Gary Webb, David, the self-mutilator.
Oh, okay. There's a famous Gary Webb that exposed a lot of secrets about the CIA.
With a pizza shop?
So this is a different Gary Webb.
Webb went into a pizza shop to rob it, but was stopped by off-duty police officers having a meal there. Imagine you do that, and the whole place is cops.
Bad timing.
The police attempted to intervene and got shot for his troubles. So a cop got shot.
Oh, no.
The woman who owned the pizza shop was also shot and is still confined to a wheelchair at the time. Gary Webb was sentenced to 14 years, but he started to write to the media and politicians that he would do it when he got out again. The politicians became so worried that Webb, they passed a special law to keep him locked up for the rest of his life.
Uh-oh. The special Gary Webb law.
Mm-hmm. Gary became a self-mutilator there. He was hospitalized for over 70 years or 70 times for cutting himself into pieces.
Mm.
He's, oh gosh. He cut his own penis 3 times.
Mm.
The third time, it was too damaged to reattach.
That's terrible.
Swallowed razor blades.
Fool me once, same on you.
Cut off his ears, cut off his left nipple, and hammered his nails onto his feet.
Why?
Because he went nuts because they were shocking him and scrambling his brain.
Gosh. gosh. Okay.
So his cell is very haunted. His room is extremely haunted.
Yeah, it sounds like he had something haunting him, is what it sounded like.
Less really is the superintendent's office. Visitors to go to the asylum who happen to walk past the office of the former superintendent report suddenly bitter taste in their mouths. According to the report, the superintendent became distraught in his life because of what he was doing, and he committed suicide in his office by swallowing cyanide.
Oh, wow.
This was named by Dr. William L. Mullen.
Because of what he was doing?
Because the hospital and everything like that. He grew a conscience.
Okay, just from running it, I guess?
Yeah, because he probably took the job without realizing
what he was actually doing.
Yeah.
Or maybe the money was just so good, and he's just like, oh, heck yeah, I'll do this. And then you see it around every day, and you're like, yeah, this is worth it every week. Yeah, this is still worth it until you realize it's not worth it. It's never worth it.
There was also hangings there.
Oh, wow. Another wonderful. Another
famous ghost you see is three hanging men, and they'll just appear randomly through the place. Mm. The ward is also haunted by three prisoners who were hung and buried there. Because they were convicted of murder, they weren't given a Christian burial. Their graves were only marked by three small scratches in the prison wall.
Wow. I do wonder, we talked about the electronic parroting phenomena. Mm-hmm. Or is that what we called it?
Yeah.
EPV? Or electronic
voice parrots.
Voice parrots, that's what it was, EVP. You know, like a hanging, for example, it's a very traumatic thing, and I'm sure all three of the people that it happened to, obviously it was very traumatic for them, and if just they put out that energy and it was so strong, and whatever these entities that live in this electronic biosphere, I don't know what you'd call it, it's such a traumatic or, I don't know, like, energetic moment, let's put it that maybe they can sense it. That's what they're just recreating that because they want that energy again and they thrive off it. So maybe just them recreating it, well, maybe they're trying to spur it up in whatever human's there to see so they get put off that energy. I don't know.
I have no idea.
I don't know if what I said just made sense.
This is the best way to make a place really haunted, though, whatever haunting is.
Oh, yeah.
It's traumatic. Torture 13,000 people to death.
Yeah, literally to death. Yeah. Very traumatic.
Brain scramble.
Only in a decade?
Would you like your brain scrambled with a pick or with electricity? What would you pick?
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Probably go with a pick.
Really?
I just imagine getting shocked.
I'd rather do electricity. I've been shocked a lot in my life. I can do that for a while.
Yeah, I mean,
I've been hit with 16 amps.
But once you get the pick thing, it's just, you're done.
Yeah, but you're also not there anymore.
Exactly. You're done. You don't even know, like, you got picked in that.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, so when I took a pill when I was a kid called Sertera, and that made me, like, trapped inside myself.
Oh, gosh.
So that's what I'm worried about with that.
No, gosh.
Is that the body is still moving, but you're conscious.
Yeah.
That's worse. I'll take the shock. I know what that's like.
I'll just take the...
I've only had it hit my head twice, though.
I'll just take the big pile of Tannerite, and I'll stand on it.
There's still ghost tours of this place, so if you want to go there. And Arvart, the town, Arvart.
Ararat?
Ararat. There you go. Ararat, Australia. It's still considered an extremely charming town. So a lot of people go there as a vacation spot and do the asylum. There's Eerie Ghost Tours is the one that do it. And it's less than 3 hours outside of Melbourne. And even if you're not into the paranormal stuff, a lot of people say the town is excellent.
It's just nice to go to. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go, Australians. If you haven't been there, go check it out on RBF. Tell them Crypts of the Corn sent you.
Tell them Crypts of the Corn sent you. I heard about your awful insane asylum and your lovely little town.
Yeah, your lovely little town, your awful history and lobotomies.
It's like, yeah, it was on the edge of town.
Yeah.
Next one I have for you.
Okay.
Is the Monte Cristo. Mm. Crisco, is that how you say it? Mm-mm. Cristo?
You were right the first time, yeah.
Homestead.
Now, is this in France? The Monte Cristo?
This is in Australia, in Oceania.
We're still in Australia, okay.
These are all in Australia.
Okay, gotcha. Has nothing to do with the Count of Monte Cristo, right?
There's a count.
Is there?
No.
Okay.
In Australia, New South Wales, you can find the Monte Cristo homestead. At first sight, the story of the house is one of success, good fortune, and happy people. But looks can be deceiving. Behind closed doors, things happen that could not bear the light of day. No wonder that Monte Cristo Homestead has a reputation for being one of Australia's most haunted houses.
Mm.
So the history. Christopher Williams Crawley was born in 1841 and died in 1910, was a farmer who bought two parcels of land in the town of Junee to build his family home on. The first years were a hard struggle for him. He lived in a slab hut, and Christopher had trouble feeding his family. But his fortune changed in 1878. When the Great Southern Railway line opened, he scraped all the money he could find together and bought a license to build a railway hotel right opposite what would soon be the open railway station. A very smart move indeed. The village of Junee was considered of the Crowley's Hotel, the adjoining railway store, and some scattered slab huts. So he went from being extremely poor, couldn't feed his family. He decided this is the move. I'm going to put everything into it.
Yeah.
And it paid off for him. So Crowley became rich.
Nice.
The entire village benefited enormously from the travelers and the agricultural trades. Crowley became a very rich man. And at some point, even became one of the town's founders. He was much loved and he was considered to be an extremely generous man. His big sense of civic responsibility. All the sounds as if Crawley was an amazing person. So why is this place haunted? Well, let's look at it.
Let's figure it out.
The built of the Monte Cristo homestead. Prior to the construction of the new homestead in 1885, the family, father, mother, and seven children lived in a small brick cottage. The original slab hut was demolished and was being suitable for prized horses. The small brick cottage, also referred to the original homestead, still exists. The house was turned into a servant's quarters. The new home, a two-story house built in late Victorian style, became its ultimate status symbol. It was built on the hill to overlook the entire town. So Christopher Crawley died in his own homestead on December 14th, 1910, from a combination of heart failure and blood poisoning.
Ooh.
The latter was caused by a crucible on his neck. He got an infection from rubbing against his starched collar. His wife, Elizabeth, couldn't cope with her husband's death. She locked herself inside the house. She spent most of her time up in the attic where she had built a small chapel. In her remaining 23 years, she only left the house twice.
Ooh.
She died at the house at the age of 92 on August 12th, 1933, due to a ruptured appendix. Then there was total vandalism. The last member of the Crawley family left the house in 1948, and the house would remain empty for decades. There are several caretakers at the house trying to keep an eye on things, but unfortunately they couldn't prevent the place from being completely vandalized. All the original furnishings were taken out of the house and sold. The house remained in poor state until the Monte Cristo homestead was bought by Reginald and Olivia Rann in 1963. So the Rann family, Rann restored the homestead to its former state. They turn it into a museum for tours, including a doll museum. Bad move. They had an antique store in it as well. Reginald died in 2014, but his wife Olivia still stands strong to this day.
Mm.
While the Rains moved to the homestead, they immediately noticed something strange was going on. When they went up to the house with their belongings, including their cat and dog, they noticed the animals did not want to enter the house. They refused.
Trust dogs.
Mm-hmm. In fact, they both ran away.
The dogs and the cats?
Yeah.
Not the people?
No, they're like, go in and run.
The people.
That's probably like, probably time to burn it down.
Wait, we just bought this. Dang it.
Should have done that first. I should have done the dog test.
Yep.
And later, when they had an evening out, they noticed all the lights were on as they approached the house. All the lights went off the second they opened the front door.
Hmm.
So how did the ghost get there? The ghost of the homestead. The homestead is haunted by people claim to be at least 10 ghosts. Some are more prominent than others. One thing is for sure, the previous owners hated animals.
Okay.
So The first family, the Crawleys, did not like animals in their house. They did not want animals in there. And they hated them in the afterlife as well. When the Ryans came home one night, they found all of their chickens strangled to death in the poultry run.
Yeah, that's bad.
Also, their pet parrot had choked to death in its cage as if something had shoved food down its throat.
Oh, jeez.
A litter of kittens raised in the breakfast room were all brutally killed as if they'd been smashed.
Oh, this is terrible.
So you start seeing, like, heavy animal mutilation.
Yeah.
Not just animals, like, disappearing or not liking the place.
No. Like,
chicken's dead, parrot, somebody shoved food down its throat, and then somebody stepped on a bunch of kittens.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a cat person, but I'm not stomping on no kittens.
No. It's like they're a troll living under the house, under the homestead.
And so Christopher Crawley's ghost is also said to haunt the room in which he died. His spirit kind as ever, though, he is claimed. So Christopher's spirit is said to be kind and just peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
People claim his wife's spirit, though, is not. She hasn't changed much since her death.
She's the mean one.
She still rules the house with an extreme iron fist, judging everyone who dares enter her home. If she doesn't like you, you'll know.
Gotcha.
She'll try to scare you with icy cold air, filling your skin, grab, touching, all that stuff. Smashing kittens.
Gosh.
There's also ghost of two maids. Christopher Crawley is said to have gotten two of his maids pregnant.
Okay.
Very generous.
Yeah.
One of them committed suicide by jumping to her death from the balcony.
Yeah, it sounds like she was taken care of her.
Well, I think it was, I think once the wife found out, she sounds to be the scarier.
Ew, so maybe she didn't jump to her own death.
There's a chance that she didn't jump.
She was pushed by Woody.
She hit the stairs and was instantly killed. Her ghost still haunts the veranda. I can never say that word. Veranda? The outside patio.
Okay.
The ghostly bloodstain marks on the spot where she met her end are still there.
Oh, that's terrible.
People said they've cleaned it many times, and bleached it, and it pops back up.
That's interesting.
The second pregnant maid gave birth to a son. His name was Harold. When Harold was a young boy, he was involved in a terrible, terrible accident on the premises.
Which includes what?
He was ran over by a coach.
Oh.
A stagecoach.
Yeah, that's not good.
The child survived the accident, but sustained head trauma and was disabled for him for the rest of his life.
Oh, jeez.
The poor boy was kept in chains in the coach room.
Oh, gosh. They just chained him up instead of...
That's what they used to do with people that had head injuries.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Local children would mock him because he would scream all day and all night.
Oh, I wonder why. Because he's chained to a wall in a stagecoach.
People claimed there was a monster, and the children called June challenged each other to find him and pester him. They was eventually put away in an insane asylum in Alberdale.
Oh, no, Airedale. Whatever it's called.
And that's where he was sent.
Ardale. Oh, wow.
He was eventually put there. He was found by authorities and chained to his mother's bed. So that's why the authorities were like, all right, you can't keep chaining this kid up.
No.
Let's put him in an insane asylum so they can shock him a little bit.
Shock him or drill a hole in his head.
He died in the insane asylum, but still haunts the ground of his homestead. He makes his presence known by the sound of his chains rattling and his screaming.
Wow. That's pretty cool. No, that's terrible.
No, that's pretty rad, man.
Yeah. No, that's terrible. That's a terrible, terrible, terrible outcome, I guess, or story.
I just
in
have a feeling that the husband and wife Crowley were very different people, like some husband and wives we know around here.
What about them?
One was considered very generous. I mean, he wasn't a perfect man. He cheated on his wife a couple times, but he was considered like he had high civic duty. He paid to fix the town. He was very generous to people. He helped people out.
Yeah.
His wife was not.
Yeah. I mean, that exists all the time, everywhere.
Imagine one ghost coming and be like, you got to get out of here before my wife gets here.
Yeah, and I have a ghost say that to you?
Yeah, you got to go. I'm not trying to scare you, but...
That would be pretty scary.
She just smashed kittens last night. You got to leave.
All right, she's coming.
Oh, it's too late. Goodbye. And he just fades out. And you're stomping.
Oh, yeah, you're in trouble then.
Like Mrs. Trenchcoat or whatever from...
Trunchbull.
Yeah. Horse trough. Mrs. Horse trough. The coach house is haunted by a young stable boy named Morris. He didn't feel well one day and decided to stay in bed at the coach house. His master didn't approve of the fact the boy's sleeping in, so he decided to teach him a lesson. He put the boy's straw bed and mattress. He went up there. He lit it on fire, thinking he would jump out and go to work. But Morris was, in fact, ill, and he couldn't get up in time. He burnt to death in his bed.
Oh, my gosh.
That his master lit on fire.
Oh, my gosh.
People still see, they say, they hear the screams of him and the ghostly fire to this day.
Yeah, what a prank.
He's going to jump out any second. Any second now. And he just starts walking away like, oh.
I was never here.
I guess he was sick.
Yeah, I was never here. I'm going back to bed.
Then he comes back out like, what happened?
Richard, what'd you do?
Points at somebody else.
Yeah.
The ghost of Ethel Crawley. Crawley's infant granddaughter, Ethel, died in 1917 because of a nursemaid dropped her down the stairs.
Oof. Oof. That's not good. How old was she?
An infant.
Okay. Gosh, it's terrible.
She claimed she was pushed by an unforeseen force, though. So the maid's like, I swear, something ran up and pushed me. The infant went flying down the stairs.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, too, if I dropped the baby.
I mean, you got to, but this is also a house where that's probably believable.
Hmm.
Anyways, but she was not believed. She went straight to the insane asylum.
Oh, jeez, they put her in there.
I made that part up.
Okay.
Today, children who visit the museum become irritable and upset anytime they see the stairs. Some guests say they feel like they're getting pushed on their backs. Some claim to still feel the icy cold, tiny, tiny hands slipping into theirs as they go up to the upstairs rooms.
Oh, that's creepy. Now, so, again, what came first, chicken or the egg in this one? Did the lady drop in the baby start at all, or was there actually something already there that pushed her, that pushed the baby out of her arms?
A little bit of both.
Little cold, tiny hands.
The ghost of Jack Simpson.
Jack Simpson?
Mm-hmm.
Who's that? Is that the baby?
No.
No.
It's a more recent ghost. It's Jack Simpson. He was one of the homestead's caretakers. And at some point, he was shot to death in 1960 on the porch in front of the house by a young man. The man was watching Alfred Hitchcock's movie Psycho three times before committing the crime. The words, "Die, Jack, haha," were carved into the shed door, where they can still be seen to the day.
So, the guy that shot him go to the insane asylum?
I think they hung him.
Oh, gosh.
I don't think he made it to that step.
No, that's terrible. Well, it's, yeah, 60s. Well, I mean, we know that, I guess, media.
There's programming in media, whether it's purposeful or not.
Yeah, you got to be careful what you consume.
He's like, I know a Jack. This old guy sitting on the porch, just relax, shoots him a bunch of times.
That's terrible.
So there's still just all kinds of other ghost experiences or ghostly things that happen on this homestead that aren't really associated with one or the other.
Okay.
Lights still come on and off all the time. They've had it rewired, modernized dozens of times. Like, electricians go through. Nobody can figure out why. But the lights will go on and off. You can be outside. It can be 100% locked.
So people still live there, I guess?
No. It's like a visiting place now, like a little museum.
Or is it like an Airbnb?
No, it's a museum.
Oh, you can't stay there?
I don't think you can. Well, okay. Because that one, the Ryan lady, or the Rayan, she still owns it. She's still alive.
Okay, gotcha.
But she turned it, her and her husband, remember, they're the ones that turned it into a museum.
They should turn it into a Scare-B&B. Ooh.
I mean, you'd make a lot more money now.
Yeah, that should be, that's a new thing. If that's not a thing, yeah, I just...
Scare-B&B?
A Scare-B&B. I just patented it.
Claim rights.
Yeah, what's that called? Intellectual property, like rights or whatever. Yeah, I thought you heard it here first. Scare-B&B.
Guests experience the feeling of nausea, overwhelming sadness, and people faint during the tours constantly.
Wow.
Even people say that they're feeling suicidal in the house.
The people running the tours like are emitting like a, what is that, rayon gas?
Infrasound.
Infrasound. What's that gas you were talking about? What?
That's an episode later.
Oh, coming up. Oh, that's some foreshadowing. Some gases. They're pumping in gases in the house to make you feel this way.
There's also disembodied whispers and unexplained mist all around the house.
See?
Orbs are seen flying all over the place. And there's also what's considered poltergeist activity with paintings and books flying off the walls and shelves.
So they got stuff planted in the walls now. They got speakers in the walls, fog machines. This is just a classic Scare-B&B, you know, 101.
So the house is featured on several paranormal TV shows. It's been featured on Scream Test, Ghost Hunters International, My Ghost Story, and so on and so on.
Ooh.
You can visit the Monte Cristo homestead on Friday to Monday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and every Saturday evening from 6 p.m. There's a ghost tour.
Mm.
So there's most of the time it's just a historical museum.
Yeah.
But Saturday nights they do like a tours. Ghost tour.
Yeah. That's when they have all the stuff hidden in the walls.
Brave souls can also spend the night there.
See, yeah. Yeah. No. I'm just joking around when I say that stuff, but I wouldn't be surprised if someone's doing that it's down there.
I guess this is going to be a two-parter.
Is it?
Yeah, I still have more.
How many more?
I'm a two. We're at 48 minutes. I'm going to try to do one more because it's in Tasmania.
Ooh, the island off Australia. Yes. Do they have the same accents down in Tasmania?
No.
Or they just sound like...
That's why I was going to do that joke.
Oh, sorry.
No, we have a lot of listeners in Tasmania. One of the biggest crabs in the world lives in Tasmania.
Ooh, was it the coconut crab?
No. No, the coconut crab is big by terrestrial standards.
Okay.
Not by aquatic standards.
Oh, it's aquatic crab.
Yeah.
Okay.
The coconut crab is just big because it's the biggest arthropod on land.
No, it's big, yeah.
It's big. I'm not saying it's not big.
We've seen one at that. Where was that at? Museum.
I can't remember. But Japanese spider crabs are like 24 feet wide.
And they're in Tasmania?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's the Tasmanian like giant clawed crab or something like that. Giant rock crab.
I remember we did that crab
episode.
They're
like 50 or 60 pounds.
Jeez.
And like half that weight is one claw.
That's crazy.
And if they get you, they just break you.
Why isn't Deadliest Catch down there grabbing those?
They're not a lot of them. People do eat them, but they're more of a delicacy than a commercially harvestable resource.
Well, that explains that then.
I think they're protected now, actually. The Richmond Bridge in Tasmania. The Richmond Bridge holds the title of being the oldest bridge of its kind still being used in Australia.
Mm.
So this article is considering Tasmania a part of Australia.
Okay.
Is that right or wrong? I don't know.
I don't know. It's probably like Puerto Rico and...
For the U.S.
For the U.S.
They are U.S. citizens, but...
What's U.S. territory?
But they are U.S. citizens.
Yeah.
Puerto Rico people... Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens.
Correct. It's U.S. territory. It's just not a state.
And it makes no sense to me.
No.
Give them statehood. Just let them be a state.
But then our flag wouldn't be, you know...
It's changed constantly for years.
Yep, but nope. They got all the papers printed. You know, they got all the advertising over there. The government don't want to pay money on that. They'd rather ship it off to a...
Hey, not this show.
Yeah.
This historical landmark also holds a far more sinister title. It is known as being the most haunted bridge in the country. This attractive stone bridge holds a history dating back to 1823 and is still being used.
Nice.
We don't have bridges that are built 10 years ago standing. When it was built by a convict labor across the Coal River.
Okay.
It was built by prisoners.
Yeah, they usually do the best work.
The bridge was an important structure because it allowed Hobart and other partial settlements, such as Port Arthur, become linked. During its long life, the Richmond Bridge witnessed a number of deaths, and many people to this day claim that the bridge is home to many, many ghosts. The most famous ghost linked to the Richmond Bridge is that of George Governor. Governor was known for being an extremely cruel man, and in 1837, he was tasked with overseeing convict repairs on the Richmond Bridge. Now you got a really, really cruel man as a bunch of prisoners fixing a bridge.
Gosh. Hey, but it was built in the 1820s, you said?
18, yeah.
That's 200 years, still going strong.
Well, this was 18. This is only 10 years after that.
Yeah, it's still.
This is 1837.
Clearly, the repairs held up.
The convicts were worked under our governor grew resentful towards him for the brutal ways he was used to motivate them to work.
Gosh, I can't imagine.
One morning, four convicts had been working under a governor, decided to exact their revenge upon him. It was said that they beat the man before throwing him over the edge of the bridge to meet his death below.
Gosh.
Ever since the murder transpired, George has claimed to haunt the Richmond Bridge. Countless people have sighted his apparition, pacing the length of the bridge on the stone path, and even striking at people. Like he's whipping people down below that are working on the bridge.
Gosh.
Grover's spirit is said to be understandably possess a lot of anger towards being murdered in such a way. The very anger is what oftentimes takes hold of visitors when they suddenly feel urges of anger that they cannot explain when they walk over the bridge. People are said to get irrationally angry when they're walking over this bridge, like they're adapting his motions.
Mm. That's interesting.
Another spirit that inhabits the bridge is connected to George Grover, is dubbed Governor's dog. Many people have claimed to see a large ghost dog walking the bridge. Some believe the dog was a large black entity. Others had described it as being Governor's dog, as being a white spirit. Either way, the canine ghost is believed to escort lone females or children making their way across the bridge at night, late at night. He is thought to be a good spirit and protector of others. Now, remember this. So some people see a white canine, too. This giant black dog ghost monster thing that's seen walks lone women and children across the bridge to make sure they're safe.
Okay.
This follows more with the true Irish traditions of the giant black dog.
Right.
They walk with lone travelers, women, children, and especially in forests and areas where it's very dangerous.
Is that like Black Shuck?
Kind of
stuff too.
Yeah, we talked about when we did our Black Shuck episodes. We've talked about this, that there's like two distinct versions of this giant black ghost dog. And this is like the protector one, where the white one is the bad one. And that's what they warn you in, like, I think it's Ireland, where they say, you know, that's why you don't trust a book by its cover.
Right, yeah.
People think the white dog is the friendly one.
It's the deadly one.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's seen too. So is it because this is a transitional area and it's a protective spirit or a protective entity?
Yeah.
It's just these giant black dogs. Maybe it's attached to human psyche, where dogs have been our protectors for so long that we kind of manifest them.
Okay.
I mean, a giant black wolf dog thing to protect you.
You got that dog in you.
You got that duck in you.
Oh, yeah. Different shirt.
Oh, the final spirit said to exist on the historic stone bridge, said to be a bridge, was being constructed back in 1823. One of the convicts on the job committed suicide by jumping off the bridge. Others say he was pushed to his limits by poor living and the extreme work conditions while building the bridge. Since his death, many have claimed to see a man lurking in or on or around the bridge, often wearing a straw hat. The Richmond Bridge it's a very dramatic entrance to the tranquil Coal River town. It is a popular tourist attraction, and there's boast plenty of historical venues in Tasmania. It is a sight not to be missed by anyone visiting the area. The pictures don't do it justice. It's a lot bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Than it looks in the pictures, because it looks like it's an extremely pretty stone bridge.
Yeah.
But it's a lot bigger than it looks in the pictures.
Okay.
So it's definitely one to visit. So what do you think? Australian ghost stories for Halloween.
Spooky. Spooky stories from down
under. Which one would you visit? Which one would you wouldn't?
Well, I'd probably like to visit that homestead.
No, that's one that's... I don't want to visit the homestead.
Yeah, well, that's probably the only one I'd like visit, like, because it's so, I don't know, weird. I guess I'm bound to probably get some, I don't know, I don't want to say get some sort of reaction, or because 90% of the time you're not going to get, nothing's ever going to happen.
It sounds like bringing a bag of kittens is a good way to help.
Yeah, I don't want to see anything like that. Don't want to bring no animals or nothing to it, that's for sure. Especially any that I own. Uh-uh.
You know, it's because Mr. Crawley would always bring home random pets, and she's just like, I hate pets.
Yeah, that's what it was.
So, and then when she, yeah, I got the picture of him like coming in and be like, guys, got to get out of here. She's coming down the stairs.
What is that? There's like a,
oh, hi, honey.
Like a natural thing. You see, like if there, I don't know. It just seems like if there is like a, like the, where the lady's like ultra aggressive or like running, you know, the boss, like Miss Trunchbull, basically. That's all I keep thinking of, Miss Trunchbull. That the guy always that's with her is like the guy that's like, doesn't challenge her. You know,
I think it's just because it's just like, whether it's opposites attract or reverse personalities.
Yeah, but must be.
Because I can think of many older couples around here that fit that motif.
Me too. That's why I think I'm just familiar with it.
Where the guy is like this old, just gentle grandpa, and the
just the nice, fun loving guy.
And then the wife is just like, I'll kill you.
Like a monster, yeah. Not that like they're bad people, no, but like in comparison, it's like scary and not scary. But I don't know if that's like a natural, I don't know. It's just a natural thing. Obviously, it's a natural thing that happens because, like you just said, in our own little town.
Yeah, I think it's just that like opposites attract that.
Yeah.
It's modern day. I think it's more, not that it's aggressive and passive. It's more introvert and extroverts. A lot of times you see those.
It's a good way to put it.
Dating or married.
Yeah. And I'm not like, I don't know.
No, it's nothing bad. It's
exactly.
I do think it falls more into that opposites attract kind of thing.
I guess you can't have two Miss Trunchbulls run in one house because the whole house
would get kill each other.
Exactly.
They kill each other. Like, you just can't do that.
No, it doesn't work. You need, there's balance in life.
Yeah. Or they'd gang up and be unstoppable.
Yeah, but you don't see that ever.
No, it's because the world would end.
They gang up on each other.
That would be it.
Yeah.
It'd be like if two T-Rexes were after you.
It'd be like when that meth house blew up on Main Street. Just all of a sudden, one day, everything explodes, and then everyone realizes, oh!
That's what was happening
What was happening there.
Now, so what do you think about all these ghost stories?
No, they're fun.
I would visit the bridge, and the homestead I would definitely not go to. Yeah. I don't want to go to the insane asylum.
No, that's, I was going to say that. I don't want to go to any of those.
The homestead sounds worse to me, though.
Yeah.
Animals exploded.
No, that part's bad, yeah.
Anytime animals explode and babies get thrown downstairs.
You're dealing with something terrible.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess that's the one I want to go just to see. But like just to see all the stuff there. But I would not want to stay there. And I would not, the one I don't want to see, I don't want to go to any old insane asylums.
No.
I don't want to even touch one or be near one because just a lot of bad stuff happened in those.
They were tortured. They were tortured.
Oh, for sure.
But like we need newer monitored mental health systems.
Yeah, we need definitely need mental health outlets or mental health hospitals just for people because of the way the world's designed today, it's a growing problem. People don't have outlets to address it correctly or properly, I guess. It's not good.
But yeah.
But I also don't think properly is lobotomizing them or chemically lobotomizing them or
dumping ethanol into somebody's brain.
Yeah.
Just pour a little on that in the frontal lobe. It'll calm them right down. And
look, it worked.
They're just staring at the wall.
Like, that sounds like something the science would do.
Well, they were the science.
Oh, that's right. They're still doing
this. This is before. And then, because it wasn't until like the 80s or the 90s that we even had rules against animal testing.
Gosh, yeah.
Because they were doing this, like, I mean, humans is worse, but
yeah,
they were doing this on animals too. And then they're
for sure.
The first scientist that ever got in trouble for it in the world was here in the U.S. And he was like, he admitted to everything. He's like, it's nothing illegal about this.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, there is. We passed a lot of animal cruelty laws. And it's just like, they forgot that they were subject to that.
Yeah, exactly. Science.
So, the only one I had left was just the North Kabunde Hotel, which maybe we'll talk about in a different episode because it's interesting in its own.
Ooh, it can be its own.
I don't think it's. I mean, it's interesting, but
maybe it'll be a Wednesday episode.
Oh yeah, we could do that there. It's definitely a hotel I would not stay at.
Interesting. Sounds like fun.
Not because it's dirty or anything. It's just because it's
bed bugs and mold.
Now, that was a different hotel.
Oh, that was equally scaring in a different way.
When the whole ceiling of the shower was mold.
That's scary on the other side
and
of the coin.
And you leave a 0-star review and
they won't stop calling you to like, please take this down. Please take it down.
No, clean up the hotel.
Yeah, please clean the mold off the ceilings.
We'll give you a free night. That's not what I want.
No, I don't want to come back there.
All right. Well, I have been the great and spooky mystery.
And I've been J Clone 24.
Remember, enjoy the festivities. Don't play with the Ouija boards. Don't let spirits into your home. Have fun.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye. Bye.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.